This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
6:14 now on a beautiful, another beautiful spring day. Really highs of 76 today, warming to 80 tomorrow and dry. 80 on Friday, dry. But then Saturday, man, you got a lot of St. Patrick's stuff coming up in the afternoon, and they're talking about the rain now maybe being in the afternoon, so we'll have to see how that all plays out. They say it's coming into sharper focus, looking more like the afternoon, but, you know, stuff changes, so we'll see, and maybe there's some alternative plans. We'll just wait till we get to the weekend itself. Andy Smith joins us now, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center, talk about President Trump and the latest with him. How you doing, Andy?
Doing good.
Glad
you have some warm weather down there. We still have snow.
Oh, no. Really?
Come back. Bring your skis.
Well, I can't do that, but I'll bring my snowshoes. Let's talk about President Trump. Somebody texted in about, you're always talking about President Trump. And I said, well, you know, President Biden, there wasn't a whole lot of activity there. So really, there's not a lot to say. I'm not quite sure if he was, you know. President's awake. There you go. That's what we got to talk about. But with President Trump, stuff changes by the hour. There's constantly something to talk about with this president, right?
There's constantly something to talk about, and I think it's probably the one part of his strategy that's designed, and that is to keep himself centered in the news. I try to think about what's going on next. I have no idea. So I think that what we can talk about is chaos, both politically and foreign policy, but we don't know what's going to happen next. It seems like he can change his mind on a dime.
And that to me is the big question. Is it chaos by design, or is it just chaos, right?
That is a question. And if this is all part of a grand plan, and again, I say both domestically and in terms of our allies, I can't see where that plan is headed yet. It's certainly keeping the news business happy.
And politically, what's interesting is that those that are big fans of President Trump, they believe that there is this big plan. They're saying, just wait and see. You'll see. Everything's fine. I saw the Commerce Secretary, I think it was on TV yesterday, saying that the tariff thing, there's a long game here that he's playing. And I'm paraphrasing the words here. News person was saying, well, no, it's chaos. And the Commerce Secretary said, no, only foolish people would say it's chaos. When it comes to, as far as we know, the president and his advisors and who's steering the ship, what do we know about that, Andy?
Well, I think it depends on the day. We've got Elon Musk doing a lot of things domestically, which I have some difficulties with on a constitutional level and a contract level. You've got foreign policy changing. First, we're going to abandon Ukraine. Now Ukraine's back on our side. And I know that he's using levers against these people bluntly, U.S. force and then with tariffs, U.S. economic might to get his way. And the problem with all of this is, yes, you may get some short-term gains, short-term advantages, but the long-term is really problematic. So I don't know which one of his people he's listening to most, the domestic policy issues, the foreign policy issues, government reorganization issues, but they've succeeded in creating uncertainty. And I think we're seeing that uncertainty reflected in the stock market. We're seeing his job approval ratings starting to drop a little bit because I think of the stock market, because it's always about the economy, mm-hmm. and the economy is looking nervous right now.
So for those that favor President Trump, they're saying, look, there's going to be some pain, but the payoff is going to come. For those that don't favor President Trump, they're saying that it only took him a couple of weeks to wreck a good economy. When it comes to the political responsibility for this, I know voters usually pay with their pockets. What kind of time frame when it comes to stock market, 401ks, economy, inflation, et cetera, how much time does the president have to show the end result of his, if he's playing the long game here or there is an economic strategy, how long does he have to get people to understand, okay, see, this is what I was trying to do all the time, or do the people that really favor him, that it doesn't matter, they'll just go with him all the way?
Well, Trump is in an interesting position because he's a second-term president right now. Which means that he doesn't really have to worry about getting reelected. So it's a different situation than we had, say, with Ronald Reagan coming in and doing a lot of work with the economy back in 1981, 82. Republicans got hammered in the 82 midterm elections, and I think that's the big fear that you're seeing right now is the uncertainty among Republicans about what's going to happen to them in the 2026 midterms. I think that that means that Trump's support, which is not very big in the House and the Senate, is going to be very nervous by next fall, because by next fall you're starting to see the contours of the 2026 election shaping up, and they better have some economic success coming in by next fall for the Republicans to be able to hold on to the House and the Senate. It's never good anyway for the president's party in midterm elections, and this, you know, if the economy's not good, then it's definitely not going to be good for Republicans.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. I want to talk to you more, Andy, if you can, talk a little more about the constitutional concerns you have with Elon Musk, because you are a political scientist, and that is what you do study for your living. That's your life's work, as well as dealing with the snow in New Hampshire, which runs until, what, July 15th? July 4th, I think, is the end of the snowfall, right?
That's our big ice out day on the lake.
Yeah, you plow it off, and then come July 8th, it starts snowing again. Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center, talking about constitutional concerns, Elon Musk. When we come back, 6:20 time now, traffic, WWL. All right, 6:25 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. Andy, you got a fan base, man. People text in and say, when's Andy coming on? When's Andy coming on? And I have to explain to them.
Boards.
Well, no, I have to explain to them, we don't have him chained up in the garage. It's not as though we could, you know, we just pull him out and tell him it answers the questions or it gets the hose. We can't do that. You have a schedule of your own. Somebody texted and said, hey, Andy, go Cats. Elon is an employee authorized by Trump as his agent with full authority to do whatever Trump directs. Look back at history, this texter tells Andy Smith, of all people, founding fathers in George Washington. Okay, he threw down a gauntlet. There you go, Andy.
Well, the way I look at it is that the president takes an oath of office to faithfully execute the laws and execute his office as president and defend and protect the Constitution. The Constitution says that it's Congress who makes the laws. Congress passes those laws that create the agencies. It's up to Congress then to change those laws. It's not up to the president to do that. So, and that includes things like, you know, closing down the USAID. That was created by Congress. Can the president close it down? No, Congress can't by law. The problem that you run into when you have a president executing these things that have been legally passed and budgets that have been legally passed and deciding what gets paid and doesn't get paid is, it means that the laws aren't there. And I go back and think about how Republicans were really very upset with the Biden administration for passing, not enforcing illegal laws against illegal immigration, or deciding that he's going to forgive student loans. Those were unconstitutional actions on the part of the Biden administration, I think, which rightly Republicans called him out on and took to the courts. Well, now Democrats are doing the same thing to the Trump administration, and I think they have the same legal ground and the same constitutional grounds for attacking the president and Elon Musk on some of the actions he's taken in trying to reform government. You got to do it through Congress. You can't just do it by, you know, waving a wand, because guess what's going to happen when the next president comes in? They're going to do the same thing, and that's going to further weaken the constitutional structure of the U.S.
And I think that's a very important point that you just made, and I try to say it, man, in the decades I've been here, I've been saying it, that you got to be careful when it comes to constitution, when it comes to structure of government, because although this is what you want now, next time it might not be your person or your philosophy that's in there, and you're not going to like being on the wrong side of it. That's why it's important to adhere to the laws of the land. I mean, that's pretty simple, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the politics is all about power. And our government is structured in a way to try to minimize powers to be concentrated in the hands of any one branch of government or one person. And that, I think, is the thing that's made the United States a successful country for 250 years. The concentration of power is the biggest problem. That's why we fought the Revolutionary War to get rid of the concentration of power. And I think that was the genius of Madison in writing the Constitution, is to split it up between branches of government, and also to split it up between what the federal government does and the states do. We've been on a journey over the last 75 to 100 years of weakening the separation of powers.
When it comes to, you know, you're a football fan, I presume, Andy, and it always drives me crazy when a team is running the ball and staying ahead of the chains and picking up 8 yards a carry and they stop. It's like, well, why are you doing it? Keep running until they stop you. I get the idea that President Trump, he's going to keep doing this till somebody stops him. He senses an absence of regulation, whatever you want to call it. He senses a vacuum, and he's going to take advantage of this as long as he possibly can.
I agree. There's nobody standing up to him yet. It'll have to be the courts that do it.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. We'll take a break. Come back. Talk to Dane Ciolino about the death penalty in Louisiana. 6:30 time for WWL First News. 6:46, 14 till 7. Tommy Tucker, WWL. Another beautiful spring morning out there. You can enjoy it. Roll the windows down and listen to us real loud, because you don't want to miss anything Dane Ciolino is about to say. It's 52 degrees right now, going up to 76 today, 79 tomorrow. Likewise, Friday, maybe some clouds by then. Saturday, St. Patrick's Parade, not so good. You got highs of 76 then, maybe some rain in the afternoon, then clears out for Sunday and Monday and into next week. Dane Ciolino joins us now, professor of law at Loyola. How are you doing, Dane?
Doing just fine, Tommy. How are you?
I'm all right. It's none of my business, but is Ciolino an Italian name or not?
I presume so.
Apparently not a lot of research into your... I was just wondering if you celebrated St. Joseph's Day or anything like that in your family?
When I was a kid, my grandmother used to take me to that. I do remember that.
The altars?
The one on Tulane Avenue.
Yeah, and you never could eat anything, which always drove me nuts. Let's talk about... Look, I got some feelings on a death penalty. I had Sister Helen Prejean on for an hour, so I guess it'll pretty well explain where I stand on this. Bring Dane down for a second, Tim, so I don't bring him into all of this. Just so everybody understands my context on this, I think it's a waste of time. It's a waste of money. I think that if you believe in an afterlife, hell will wait for these people, as the guy that died before they could execute him a couple of weeks ago, Jeff Landry, said he's now in hell getting his justice, and I'm paraphrasing that. Well, okay, hell's going to be there for eternity. My dad once expressed eternity, described it as an ant walking around a case-hardened steel ball the size of the earth, and when that wore down to the size of a BB, eternity was just beginning. I only say that because hell will always be there. If you don't believe in an afterlife, well then, if you execute a death row prisoner, all you're doing is putting them to sleep like you would an animal that's in distress. So why would you want to do that if you're intent on punishing the person? It costs more, without doubt, to keep them on death row with all of the appeals than it does to execute. I think it's nothing but bloodlust, and there's proof, going back to my first high school debate, that it does not serve as a deterrent, because they used to hang pickpockets in England and they had a public execution to discourage pickpocketing, and they had a big problems with pickpocketing at public execution. So I just think it's a big waste of money. I think it's bloodlust. I think it's revenge-driven. And one thing that really got my attention was when Len Davis had his stay granted by, or his sentence commuted by Joe Biden. Len Davis said, no, execute me. And Kim Groves, the victim of Len Davis, her family said, no, keep him on death row. Don't execute him. So that's where I stand. With that, let's bring up Dane Cingolino now to keep him out of my mess and talk about the legalities involved here. Hey, Dane, you're Italian or not? Just kidding. Let's talk. Well, if do you want to weigh into at all the legalities involved in capital punishment and why, it, without expressing an opinion, why it is so much more expensive than to put somebody on death row than it is to just sentence them to life in prison?
Yeah, and I've handled several of these capital cases, both in federal court and in state court, as a lawyer for the accused, and they are so expensive because of the extraordinary due process that has got to be given to these defendants, and it involves paying money for multiple lawyers for each defendant, for experts to deal with mitigation issues in advance and at the death phase of the trial, and then the appeals, post-conviction relief proceedings, habeas corpus proceedings in federal court. And by the time you go through all that, it's 10, 15, 20, or 25 years down the road, and you're paying to feed, house in special jail cells these condemned individuals. As you said, it's quite expensive, and its deterrent value is quite questionable.
So let's talk about cruel and unusual punishment, as I guess the history has proven, and what the founding fathers or what the legal experts have determined that what constitutes cruel and unusual punishment.
Yeah, the Eighth Amendment to the United States Constitution prohibits the state or the federal government from imposing punishment that's cruel and unusual. And in the context of the death penalty, that means a lot of things. But as to what this litigation is about in Baton Rouge, it means that a method of execution cannot impose unnecessary pain and suffering. And that was the issue before Judge Dick in the Middle District of Louisiana in Baton Rouge. And she determined yesterday in a fairly lengthy opinion that nitrogen hypoxia, which the state had planned to use on this condemned individual, does impose 30 to 40 seconds worth of suffering that's extreme and that is unnecessary given other alternatives. Such that she found as a factual and legal matter that this is or would be cruel and unusual punishment if administered to this condemned individual. And therefore, she enjoined the state from going forward with the execution.
So what happens now?
Well, now it's going to go to the United States Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans. That matter will be likely extensively briefed by both the state and the lawyers for the condemned plaintiff. It'll be probably orally argued. Then a full-length decision will come out. Now we're months and months down the road, and whoever loses that appeal is going to wind up asking the U.S. Supreme Court to grant certiorari and to hear the case on discretionary review. And if the court agrees to take the case, we're looking at least another year or a year and a half of continued litigation.
Other states have used nitrogen gas to do this?
Alabama has very recently, and much of the testimony before Judge Dick in Baton Rouge was about the suffering that witnesses to the execution saw during the procedure. And she found that, as well as testimony from the condemned plaintiff's expert witnesses, medical experts, to be persuasive. And she, as a factual matter, found that what the state here was proposing was would impose undue suffering, and that there were other
execution methods that were available that would impose less suffering. And for that reason, she found an Eighth Amendment violation.
Dane, you well know that I'm one of your scholarly peers when it comes to law, but I'm going to lay that aside for a while and just be a layman, okay? No, but seriously, when it comes to cruel and unusual punishment, to me, forget the 40 seconds of whatever it is when you got the mask over your face. You're sitting there, you're gonna be killed tomorrow. No, you're not. You're going to be killed next week. No, you're not. You're going to be killed a year from now. No, you're not. We take you there. We sit you in a room. We give you your last meal. Then we, and I'm not laughing about this. I'm just saying as far as the cruel and unusual part of it, then we walk you. And I understand these people are criminals and they deserve punishment. I'm not being soft on them at all. I'm just saying from a layman, the cruel and unusual punishment part seems like all of that. And then walking them to the death chamber and strapping them down, all of that. That's pretty cruel and unusual, is it not?
Well, the courts have said no. The delays are not unconstitutional, particularly in light of the delays are a result of the defendant's appeals and post-conviction efforts.
Okay, so this person, from this person's standpoint, this that was set to be executed, he will now have to sit for a year and wonder what happens. Accurate about?
Well, I think he knows what happened. He was in court, so he's gonna sit there.
No, but I mean, what's gonna happen in a year?
Right. That's right. That's right. So he'll be in jail while the state at this stage appeals, and he'll be in jail while the state or his lawyers appeal or seek certiorari from the United States Supreme Court.
Wondering if he's going to be executed.
Exactly.
Which, to me, constitutes cruel and unusual punishment, but that's just me. Thank you, Dane. 655, 5 till 7, traffic now, WWO.